Hare Krishna. So I'm audible? Okay. So, Hare Krishna. To all the devotees there at Atlanta, thank you so much for inviting me to your Sangha. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kalpataru bhayascha kripa sindhu bhayavacha. Pathitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Ananta koti vaishnavrinda ki jai. Shri Radha Damodar Bhagavan ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Lakshmi Nishingadev Bhagavan ki jai. Prahlad Maharaj ki jai. Gaunitai ki jai. Giriraj Govardhan ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Guru Maharaj ki jai, Iskon Vartaman Guru Vrinda ki jai. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chukshurun Malatam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Hare Krishna. I have a sore throat. I guess too many Damodar programs and too many classes. So, I just hope I'm clear. So today is a very interesting topic. I've been asked to speak on a recipe for a happy life. And I was just trying to understand what kind of recipe Krishna is prescribing. And then I came across this verse in Bhagavad Gita 5.23. I'll just read it for you. Shaknoti haivaya shodham praksharira vimokshanat kama krodod bhavam vegam sayukta sa sukhi nara. Krishna is saying sukhi nara, happy human being. And he gave the recipe here, ready-made recipe, and with the quantity is mentioned what is to be done so that we can be a happy human being. So here Krishna says, saknoti haiva yashodham. If one is able to tolerate what? Urges of material senses. And if one is able to check the force of desire and anger, then he is a yogi and is happy in this world. Now, we need to get the recipe from the original cook. There may be so many versions by different motivational speakers, or you know, where they tell you do this, do that, and you can be happy, be nice to your partner, do this, speak that. But Krishna has given us the original recipe, how to be happy, because we are His creations and this world is His creation. So He can tell us the right recipe, how to be happy. And He clearly says here, Sa Sukhi Nara, who can be happy? One who tolerates. Tolerates what? Material senses, the urges of material senses. And it's so practical, frankly. We all want to be happy, okay? So how do we be happy? And we all understand possessions is not making us happy. We have all the possessions in the world, it's not making us happy. We are trying to fulfill all the desires of our senses, it's not making us happy. It's more like putting the fire, putting the ghee, putting the clarified butter in the fire. It makes the fire more stronger, but it doesn't extinguish the fire. So we've tried enjoying material senses. We have tried having possessions. We have tried giving counseling to mind, but nothing is giving us permanent happiness. So here the original cook says, okay, I'll tell you what's the recipe for happy human being. Instead of trying to enjoy the material senses, one controls the urges of material senses and one checks one's desire and anger, then he can be happy. And this is not at one place. Several other places Krishna keeps repeating this. He says again in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse number 14, to Arjuna, he says, Tam titikshasva bharata, just tolerate. Just like there's winter and summer. During winter, we tolerate the, you know, the cold, and during the summer, we tolerate the heat. Similarly, you tolerate the situations, happiness and distress in your life. Then elsewhere again in Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, Bhakti Yoga, Krishna says, who is Krishna's favorite, or who does Krishna, you know, understand to be his right devotee, he says, sama shatrocha mitrecha tatha manapamanoya sitoshna sukha dukkeshu. So one who is equipoised, that means tolerant, one who is equipoised during sukha dukkha, that means happiness and distress, one who is equipoised with enemy and friend, tulya ninda, one who is equipoised during praise and criticism, one is equipoised during sit ushna, heat and cold. So there also Krishna says that mana apamanayo, insult, mana respect, insult respect. If one is able to tolerate, then he says priyo nara, priyo nara, that nara, that you, I like that person. And then again in Srimad Bhagavatam canto 3 text 21 says titikshava karunika, all the qualities of a devotee, a sadhu. And the first thing the verse starts with says titikshava, tolerant, be tolerant. And then again in canto 4 we see how Svayambhumanu, when Dhruva Maharaj's brother gets killed, Uttam gets killed by Yaksha, and then he goes and attacks the Yakshas, and he almost, you know, destroys their whole, there's nobody left, all the whole lineage, you know, all the Yakshas. And then Svayambhumanu comes and says, this is not fair. Then he also quotes this verse and he tells Dhruva, be tolerant. And then in the 7th canto, chapter 13, we see when Prahlad Maharaj is on his tour and he sees this Avadhuta who is being insulted by some people and praised by some people, but he's so equipoised. And then Prahlad Maharaj asks the Avadhuta, how are you able to remain like this? You know, some people are ridiculing you and criticizing you, and then some people are praising you, and how come you are? And then he simply says, the Avadhuta says, well, different people have different mentality, it's not my business to correct them. And he simply tolerates. So if I just go on and on and on and on like this, there are hundreds and hundreds, because the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is full of that. You see in the Brahma's prayer also, the 10th canto, chapter 14, verse number 8, Brahma says, Tatte no kampa su samikshamano, says that those who tolerate, they become the recipient of Lord's mercy, and they'll definitely go back to the Lord after this birth is over. So we can go on and on. We understand that means tolerance is the foundation of all the good qualities, and unless and until we get all the good qualities, we can't remain happy. So if one wants to be happy, then one has to be tolerant. One has to be tolerant. You see here in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, verse number 48, very, very beautiful verse, again talks about tolerance. In fact, I'm just reminded of Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes when the devotees go and complain, you know, this person is doing this, this person is acting like that, Srila Prabhupada, what should we do? How do we tolerate this person? And then Prabhupada said, tolerate him just in the way I am tolerating you, you know, Srila Prabhupada said that. So everywhere you see, devotee means tolerance. It's like a synonym. It's like one of the symptoms. If you are a devotee, means you are tolerant. You are tolerant because Krishna is so tolerant of you. I am just reminded of this very beautiful story. Once His Holiness Mahanidhi Swami was saying that there was this one man who had taken 1,000 rupees loan from a king. And then he could not repay it back. So the king said, since you're not able to repay it back, I'll sell you as a slave to the other king. So he pleaded and begged and cried, and he was fall on the feet of the king and said, please don't do that. Please forgive me. So finally he said, okay. And the king mercifully forgave him. Now this man became very happy. As he was walking on the road, he came across another man who had taken 100 rupees loan from him. Then he said, you're not giving back my loan and all, and come, I'll get you arrested. And then he takes him to the king and says, this man has not given back my loan, kindly arrest him. And the king says, is it fair? I just now, you know, forgive you for 1,000 rupees that you have taken from me, and you are not able to forgive this man who has taken 100 from you. I'll get you arrested first. So then Maharaj was making this point that Krishna has been so kind to us, and he's been so tolerant and so forgiving. Why can't we show the same tolerance and forgiving nature towards other? Just like Mother Earth tolerates us every single day. We are walking on her and, you know, putting all our weight on her, but she's tolerating. So here you see in this Canto 1, Chapter 18, verse number 48, it says that the devotee of the Lord, they're so forbearing. And here it says, mentions, what ways if the devotees are troubled, still they remain tolerant. And I thought this is the most beautiful verse. It says, Tirakshita viprlabdha shapta shipta hata api na asya tat pratirkurvanti tad bhakta prabhavo api. And this is the heights of it. They're not asking us simply to be nice to people. They're asking us to tolerate to the highest extent. And the first word they say is that tiraskrita. Even if you are defamed, somebody abuses you, you says bad things, those who are devotees of the Lord, they never incline to counteract such reverses. And then when you read this word tiraskrita, you're just reminded of Srimad Bhagavatam, the particular instance of Daksha Prajapati and Lord Shiva. How when Daksha Prajapati enters the arena, sacrificial arena, and everybody gets up in respect. And Daksha Prajapati, when he enters and he sees Lord Shiva has not got up, he feels very offended because he thinks, Brahma is my father, he doesn't get up, that's all right, but Shiva is my son-in-law, how come he didn't get up? So he gets very angry and he starts abusing Lord Shiva like anything. And, speaking out of context. He starts speaking things like, because of this Brahma, because Brahma told me I got my daughter married to him, what kind of person he is. He's having owl eyes. My daughter has a doe eye. And why did I get my daughter married to him? And all sorts of things. But Shiva, tiraskrita, though he's defamed, he's abused, simply walks out. Does not say even one word. He simply walks out of that place. We see in the case of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, without any fault of Ambarish Maharaj, has abused him and has tried to send somebody to kill him, but he does not speak anything. We see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for prasadam, the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Amogha, he criticizes Mahaprabhu, defames, oh, you are a sannyasi and you are eating so much, and Mahaprabhu does not say anything, So this is, Mahaprabhu has shown by his example, because he has come as Bhakta Avatara, that the best quality of a devotee is tiraskrita. Even if he is tiraskrita, he is defamed, he will not retaliate back. And then vipralabdha. Vipralabdha, that means even if a devotee is cheated, when we read this, we are reminded of Nabhaga, the father of Ambarish Maharaj. Nabhaga, the son of Nabhaga, he was in his gurukul, in his guru's ashram. And after completing his education, when he came back, his brothers, they were not prepared. They thought he will never come back. Maybe because he's gone to Brahmachari ashram, maybe he will take sannyas and he will never come back. But when he came back home, they didn't know what to do because they had already divided the wealth among themselves. And now when he asked for a share, then they said, well, brother, your share is our old father. You take him. Now, this Nabhaga was so innocent. He goes to his father and says, father, you are my share. That's what my brothers have given and I'll take you. Let's go. And the father starts laughing. He says, I'm nobody's share. They've fooled you. They've cheated you. Then he said, what should I do? And he says, okay, there is a certain sect of Brahmanas and they've been doing some mantras and some fire sacrifice and they are making some mistakes in the recitation of the slokas. So you go there, help them and then they will give you something. So then Nabhaga, he goes there. And then on the sixth day when they make a mistake and Nabhaga helps them out, they are very happy. And after the whole fire sacrifice is over, whatever was there, food, grain, gold, silver, whatever, wealth, everything, the rishis, they leave it there. They said, Nabhaga, you can take it. And they just leave to the higher planetary systems. And when Nabhaga is just about to take it, then Lord Shiva comes there. And he says, this is mine. But Nabhaga says, but the rishis, they gave it to me. He says, no, you won't. Go and ask your father. He'll tell you the truth. So he goes and asks his father that, my dear father, you said I should take the wealth, but Lord Shiva has come and he's claiming it. So what should I do? His father says, Lord Shiva is right. Whatever is the remains of the fire sacrifice, he's actually, he gets that share. So it is his. Then Nabhaga goes back and he tells Lord Shiva, yeah, you are right. This is yours. And Lord Shiva becomes so happy because of his honesty. He could have as well said lie that my father said it's my share. He says, no, my father said it's yours. Then Lord Shiva says, well, I'm simply testing you, Baba. Take this whole thing. I don't need anything. Not only that, I'll give you spiritual knowledge. And then he gives spiritual knowledge to Nabhaga. So here we see that though, you know, Vipralabdha, he was cheated by his brothers, but he never retaliated. And then what happens? Glories. He becomes glorious. He gets blessings from Lord Shiva and such a beautiful, you know, glorious lineage, you know, his kula. He's now known as, oh, the great Nabhaga. So like that we see the devotees of the Lord, whether they are defamed, whether they are cheated. And the next word is saptaha, whether they are cursed. Even if they are cursed, they won't retaliate back. We see in the case of Parikshit Maharaj. He was cursed by Samik Rishi's son. And Parikshit Maharaj was a powerful king. When a little boy cursed him, Shringi, Parikshit Maharaj could have cursed him back. You know, how dare you? But he just accepts. We see in the case of Garuda, when Saubar Muni was doing tapasya underwater, and he saw every day Garuda is coming and eating those fishes, and he felt sympathetic because the fishes were lamenting when their partners, spouses are eaten away by Garuda. So he warns Garuda, he says, don't come here. So Garuda says, okay, I won't come, but today I am hungry, so today's share I will eat. And then Saubar Muni gets very upset. He said, I'm telling you, still you're not listening, I curse you. If you come here again, you will die. You cannot touch any fish from here. Now Garuda is powerful. He's the Lord's vehicle, you know. He can counter curse back, you know. But he doesn't curse. He just accepts it. He said, okay, I'll not come here anymore. So we see here, defamed or cheated or cursed, oh, they will not retaliate back. Then the next thing says Shipta. Shipta is ignored. If the devotee of the Lord is ignored, still he doesn't feel bad about it. Tatha manapamanayo, is equipoised. We see in the case of Sukadev Goswami, when his father Vyasadev sends him to Janak Maharaj. Janak Maharaj is, of course, then Janak Maharaj is Mother Sita's father, but Janak is also the name of all those kings who are in Mithila. So he may not be necessarily the one who is Sita's father, just like a surname. So he says that go and take, you know, spiritual teachings and initiation from Janak Maharaj. So Sukadev Goswami, he goes, and when he's there in the entrance of the kingdom, you know, the palace, the guards come and they ask him to wait. You know, Janak Maharaj is little busy, so he's waiting. So 1 hour, 2 hour, few hours, 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, he's simply waiting there, and nobody comes to even respond to him. And then finally, after 3 days, Janak Maharaj comes with the white umbrella and royal procession and Nadaswaram and trumpets and Vedic mantra chanting, and they welcome him very grandly and they bring him inside. But Sukadev Goswami has no reaction. Same reaction when he was ignored for 3 days, standing there waiting in anticipation. And when he was given a grand welcome, same, there is no reaction to it. And then he was asked that, You know, he asked questions, how as a grihastha you are able to keep your focus on the Lord. And then Janak Maharaj asked him to take a bowl of oil and without spilling it, go around the whole kingdom. And then Sukadev Goswami does it very well, without spilling anything. That means with one pointed focus. And then he is again tested by Janak Maharaj by putting some sugar on his tongue. And then the sugar is not supposed to melt. Now for any of us, you can imagine, you know, there's something sweet lying on your tongue. Definitely you start salivating and it will go inside. But he had so much sense control, the sugar crystals never melted. So then Janak said, okay, you have passed the test of, sense control. So here we see, even though he was ignored, he's so tolerant. So that is the devotees of the Lord. And then says, hata api. Even if somebody kills or tries to kill, in case of Ambarish and Durvasa Muni tried to kill Ambarish Maharaj, still no reaction. We see in the Mahabharata how Draupadi's 5 sons, they were killed by Ashwatthama. Hata api, they were killed. But when Ashwatthama was brought in front of Draupadi, she forgave. She said, no, he's a Brahman Putra. He's our guru's son. He has a widow mother. And if we kill him, his mother will cry for him, just like I'm crying for my sons. So please don't kill him. You just leave him. And when we hear all this, we feel, wow, this is amazing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of such examples and such leelas, how the devotees of the Lord, even if they are defamed, they are cheated, they are cursed, they are ignored, they are killed, they are never inclined to counteract such reverses. They just accept it. Why are they able to do this? How they are able to do this? It's very simple. You see, just like when you go in the aeroplane, the first thing they will ask you is that, you know, you have to switch off your cell phone. And you have to switch it off till the whole journey is over, till the end of the journey. So why? Because when you are in the higher dimensions, you are high up, you will have to give up on the lower connections. Similarly, if somebody wants to go back home, back to Godhead, somebody wants to connect to the Supreme Lord, then one has to give up on the lower connections with karma, krodha, moha, lobha. If somebody thinks that I'll be like an ordinary person exhibiting all the anarthas and exhibiting all those connections with lust and greed and anger and enviousness and pride, and I should still be able to transcend and get connected to the higher dimension, it's not possible. One has to give up. Unless and until you give up, the plane which flies has to give up earth. If the plane cannot still, you know, keep rolling on the earth, you know, on the surface, it has to leave, then it can go high. So unless and until we leave our connection with those anarthas, we can't get connected to the Lord. So we see in Srimad Bhagavatam so many such instances. So how these great devotees are able to do it? Because they want something higher, you'll have to give up on lower. You can't catch both the things, right? Now, when we hear all this, we may feel, my God, this is pretty lofty. Do you think we can come to that stage sometime where we can, you know, even defame, cheated, cursed, ignored, neglected? Forget about if somebody doesn't smile at us on Sunday feast program in the temple, we'll have 100 thoughts. What happened? Why this person has not spoken to me? And here they're saying that should be the standard of the devotee, where he has no complaint and he's easily accepting everything. So can we come to that stage? Now the Acharya says, yeah, it's possible. Just like when somebody takes admission in the school, you don't always remain in class 1. You'll go from class 1 to class 2 to class 3. But the thing is, you have to remain in the school. You cannot go out of the school. In fact, I don't know, but nowadays there's a new rule, you know. You can't even detain a child in the same class, it seems. I mean, I'm running a school, so I know those rules. So even if the child is not qualified, the fact that he has attended the whole year, you cannot detain him. You have to promote the child to the next class. So that means the Jenoteno prakarena, somehow or the other, we should remain in the school. That's the whole point. And if we remain in the school, one day we'll complete our 10th class or we'll complete our graduation and we'll come out. And not only should we remain in the school, we should also be ready to be corrected by the teacher and guided by the teacher. And then it'll happen slowly and steady. Slowly and steady, we'll go step by step to the next class. So I was thinking that there are so many kinds of tolerance. One is you tolerate your desire to enjoy something. You tolerate other people's behavior. You tolerate provocating situations. You tolerate so many things. But there is one more thing that we all need to tolerate is tolerate corrections. That is so important. Unless and until we are open to corrections and feedbacks, we can never improve on ourselves. And if we can't improve on ourselves and we can't get good qualities, then we can't go back home, back to Godhead. So the whole point is we need to be open to corrections, because all of us somewhere or the other has some blind spots, some weaknesses, and sometimes we are able to see it for ourselves. Sometimes we need people to help us with that. Just like when you drive a car, okay, some things you can see in your side windows or in the rear mirror, But sometimes when you are changing the lane, you also need to look out of the window because you don't want to make an accident. So similarly, certain corrections and feedbacks we get from people and certain introspection we have to do it ourselves, and we have to be ready for corrections. Unless and until we are ready for corrections, we cannot develop good qualities. We'll always remain on the same stage. We see in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this particular incident where Lord Krishna is moving around in Mathura with his cowherd boyfriends. And this is before killing of Kamsa. So there are so many incidents that happen. They visit a washerman and they visit a person who sells flower garlands and they go and see that bow. So many things. They're just moving and exploring the whole city of Mathura. And then they come across this hunchback lady called Kubja. Now Kubja is hunchback, and she's, you know, she's having that bended form, you know, vakra. She's not properly formed. And she makes sandalwood and all those beautiful perfumes, you know, aromatic perfumes for King Kamsa. Now, when Kubja meets Krishna, and then what Krishna does to Kubja, he steps on Kubja's toes, he pulls her chin, he lifts her torso, and then Kubja turns into a beautiful lady. Now, what we see here is Kubja was ready for corrections. She surrendered herself. She didn't say, you can't touch me this way, you can't pull me like this, oh, it's hurting me. No, I mean, she was completely surrender, do whatever it takes, you know, to, but you make me beautiful. And that should be a devotee's attitude towards Guru and Krishna, right? Sometimes Krishna does their job for us directly, and sometimes Guru does it. Sometimes Krishna does it if we don't do it ourselves properly, just like goldsmith. What does a goldsmith do? Every day he's, you know, with his small hammer, he's hitting the bangle, he's hitting the earring, and at the end of the day it becomes a beautiful gold earrings. So sometimes if we are not doing this job ourselves, or beating our ego and beating ourselves and making into beautiful earrings, then if we don't do the job of the goldsmith, then Krishna will do the job of the blacksmith. And he will hit us with his hammer, and that will be public in front of everybody. Just like he did the blacksmith job number of times with Brahma and Indra and publicly. And for the rest of the eternity, we talk about the Brahma Vimohan Leela, and we talk about the Govardhan Leela and how ego of Indra was crushed. So this job, this openness for correction, unless and until we surrender and we tolerate to be corrected. This is also one kind of tolerance, because we don't want to be corrected. We don't like if somebody corrects us or tells us our fault. But if we are open to it, then we can become as beautiful as Kubja. We see in the case of Kala Krishna Das from Chaitanya Charitamritam, how he just went away with the Bhattacharis, the gypsy women. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu corrected him, brought him back by his hair. What are you doing? You know, come back. And then he comes back. He's ready to be corrected. We see in the case of Maharaj Chitraketu from Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Chitraketu actually had no fault. He just commented on Mother Parvati sitting on Lord Shiva's lap while he's addressing the assembly of saints. And Chitraketu passes as a comment, and Mother Parvati becomes angry on him, and she immediately curses him. And immediately Maharaj Chitraketu accepts it. He said, okay, Mother, if that's your desire, be it so. So he's ready to be corrected. And because he was ready to be corrected, then he becomes Vritsasur. And it is so glorious death that he had in Smarana, remembering the Lord. It was more glorious. When we talk about Vritsasur, we are not talking about Indra, how he killed with thunderbolt. We are actually glorifying Vritsasur, how he died in such a beautiful separation of the Lord. So he got a higher remembrance of the Lord, and he became more glorious. That means as devotees, when we are ready to accept corrections, when we are tolerant towards correction, then our lives will become more glorious. So like that, we see n number of examples in the scriptures where devotees who have graciously accepted corrections becomes more beautiful devotees, amazing devotees. Now a question may come into our minds. We understand that, but still our mind is unable to accept corrections. Why is this it happen like that? Why don't we want to accept corrections? What is the mentality behind that? So the actual problem why we are not able to accept corrections is because of a strong attachment to the matter. We are so attached to our body, we are so attached to things, and we are worried that if I accept these corrections, then I'll have to lose on this particular thing which I'm very much attached to, and I don't want to lose on that. For example, I'm just reminded of this this pastime of Devyani. She's a daughter of Shukracharya, and there is the son of Brihaspati. His name is Kacha, and he comes to learn the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra from Shukracharya. So he's a student of Shukracharya and a good one. And Devyani is regularly watching him because he's staying with them in the ashram. Then Devyani gets attracted to him. So Devyani goes and proposes that, I want to get married to you. And Karcha says, look, that's not correct. You are my guru's daughter and I respect you. And I have not thought about you in such a way. I don't want to get married to you. And Devyani gets very upset and says, I curse you. You will forget all the knowledge that you have taken from my father. And then Karcha also becomes very angry. He said, without reason you are cursing me. I also curse you. You cannot marry a Brahman. You'll never be able to marry a Brahman. Now what we see in this, what Karcha was saying was not wrong. If Devyani would have simply accepted the correction. Oh yes, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. I should not have thought it in this way. But she's not ready to get corrected because she's attached. She wants to get married to him. She doesn't want to lose on him. She's attached to matter. So sometimes we are so attached to particular thing and we think, if I take this particular correction, if I accept this correction, then I'll have to lose on this, right? So that is one thing because of which we are not able to accept correction. The other thing why we don't accept corrections is because of our attachment to false glory. We get so attached to people thinking about us in a certain way and the way we have projected ourselves, then we don't want to get corrected. Though we understand we are not perfect, because human beings have these four defects, is it not? Imperfect senses and the cheating propensity and illusioned. So all these defects are there, but still we think we are perfect. Everybody around us should think about us, that we are the most perfect people, and we don't want to lose our glory. Like we see in the example of Dronacharya and Drupad. Dronacharya and Drupad, what happened? Drupad and Dronacharya, they were friends in Gurukul. So at that time he had told him that whatever is mine, we both will share. And finally when Drupad becomes king, then Dronacharya comes and he's telling him that, look, this was your promise, my dear friend, and you said you will give me half, so I have come to ask, And then Drupad immediately feels very embarrassed, that what will my ministers think, I have a friend who is so wretched and poor, look at his dhoti all torn, and he comes and tells in front of everybody that I am his friend. So he immediately says, don't try to make a relationship with me. You are a Brahman, you want something, okay, ask his minister, give him something, give him some bhiksha, give him something and ask him to go from here. Now, basically, Dronacharya had given him correction. Hey, you my friend, this is what you have promised. And Drupad could have accepted it, but he didn't accept that correction. Why? Attachment to false glory. What will people think about me? What will he think? What will she think? What will he say? What will she say? So, no, I don't want to. So, he's not ready to accept the correction. And of course, this goes on. This is a big story and how finally Dronacharya feels very insulted. And then when he trains the Kauravas and Pandavas in the science of using weapons and archery and all. And finally, as a Guru Dakshina, he asked them to bring Drupad, you know. So then they get Drupad like an animal tied with ropes. And then Dronacharya tells him, so you didn't want to give me your kingdom, but looks like now your whole kingdom is mine and I can even cut your throat. But my dear friend, I won't do that. You know, I'll keep my promise and I'll give you my half kingdom. Now, here is also another chance where Drupad could have said, okay, fine. I accept this. I did something wrong to him. Now, you know, he's given me back. There ends the story. No, he still was not ready to take the correction. And he still was thinking about how to revenge it out. And then he goes back and has a fire sacrifice. And then, you know, Draupadi and Dhrishtadyumna comes out. And especially this fire sacrifice is to get a son who can kill Dronacharya. So what's happening ultimately? He's not ready to accept correction. Because of his own false glory. So this is sometimes it happens, you know, we don't want to accept correction. The other reason why we don't want to accept correction is also because of low humility quotient. There's so much pride that we don't want to be humble. We don't want to accept. We don't want, who is he or she to correct me? I know better for myself, you know. Like we see in the case of Sharmishta and Devyani. Devyani was the daughter of Shukracharya and Sharmishta was the daughter of a king. Both were friends and they were taking bath in a river. And then while they're taking bath, Lord Shiva is passing from there in his bull. And then both of them think, oh, Shiva is passing, we should cover our bodies. So now Sharmishta, she just runs out of the pond and she doesn't know what to do. So she just takes Devyani's clothes and wears them. Now Devyani, who is a Brahman's daughter, she gets very upset and she says, how can you wear my clothes? This is something like a dog taking the clarified butter which was supposed to be offered in fire sacrifice. Now there's a lot of double meaning into this because dogs are usually pet animals who take care of the house. So what she meant to say by addressing her, you know, as a dog, because father is a Kshatriya and Kshatriyas are supposed to take care of the Brahmanas and Devyani belongs to a Brahmana family. So she meant to say, you people are like dogs, you're supposed to take care of us, and instead you are taking the clarified butter, you know, which is supposed to be used in fire sacrifice. How dare you wear my clothes? Now, Devyani is a daughter of a Brahmana, so she can speak very well. But Sharmishta, she was a daughter of a king, she can act very well because she's a Kshatriya. She got angry and she just took Devyani and put her inside the well. So now here, low humility quotient. Okay, even if she said certain words, you just accept it. Oh, that's right. I mean, as a Kshatriya, I'm not supposed to touch the clothes of a, you know, Brahmin. They are in a highly elevated class. So the matter would have ended there. But then again, it went on, right? Because she could not tolerate and she pushed Devyani inside the well. Then Devyani finally came out. She complained to her father. Her father got very angry, Shukracharya. By that time, Sharmishta, she went back to her father, who is a king, and explained all this thing. This is what I did. And his father was, why did you do that? Now Shukracharya will get very angry on me. And instead of waiting for Shukracharya to come and curse, her father runs, you know. Runs and then while he's on the way to Shukracharya's ashram, Shukracharya is coming from that side, and even before doing anything else, he just offers prostrated obeisances to Shukracharya, and Shukracharya says, get up, I want to talk to you. And he's like, no, unless and until you forgive me. And then he says, I want to offer my daughter as a slave, as a servant to your daughter, you know, please accept. And Sharmishta had to be a servant for the rest of her life, you know, to Devyani. So this is what happened. So why low humility quotient? If she would have simply accepted the correction which was made by, Shukracharya, who happens to be the guru of her father, things would have been different. So this is one thing we have to, tolerate to be corrected. We have to accept corrections, tolerance for accepting corrections. Another reason why we are not able to maybe accept corrections, maybe also because of we are afraid to accept our own imperfections. because we think about ourselves to be perfect, and this is something like showing us mirror, and we actually see ourselves in mirror and we are afraid, oh really, am I really like this? Because we have our own notions, and we have made a picture of ourselves by wearing so many masks, and finally when somebody is removing our mask and showing us the real you, and then we are very afraid to accept our imperfections. So that is one reason why we are not able to accept if somebody is correcting us. The other reason also may be fear of losing our loved ones and our relationships, because sometimes certain upbringings are like that, certain family situations, certain way the person is brought up, you know, their teachers and mentors and their elders in the family maybe have brought them up in such a way that every time that they have shown their imperfections, they were deprived of things. If you don't get this first rank, you don't get this. If you don't get, you know, show yourself to be perfect in this, then you are deprived of certain privileges. So that is where they become so used to that, no, I have to be perfect, I have to be perfect. If I'm not perfect, nobody will love me. If I'm like this only, then people will love me. Otherwise, they won't love, because that's how the family situation is where they're living in. That's how they have been trained. So that's why they're not ready to accept corrections. Even if somebody wants to genuinely help them, they become very defensive. They make a defense wall around themselves and prove that, no, I'm not wrong. I don't want any corrections from anybody. So this may be one reason why people don't want to accept, because maybe they never came across people who can love them for what they are actually. And then other reason why somebody may not be able to accept corrections also maybe because they are so disconnected from their own selves. They really don't know who they themselves are. They simply whole life have done only one thing, following others. He is doing like this, so I should do. She is doing like that, so I should do. But they have never thought about, you know, contemplating, introspecting. What do I need? What are my needs? What am I supposed to do? How much I can do? How much I can't do? There is no such thinking. It's just happening. Everything is happening mechanically. Everybody goes into IIT, so you go into IIT and become engineer. Everybody does this, so you do this. And then you simply do. So you have no understanding of your own self, what you want, what is your goal. You know, there is no such introspection, contemplation, reflection. Life is simply going on mechanical. So one needs to pause and think. Then one can open up oneself, you know, okay, I want correction. I think I need help, you know. So this is one thing. No, you always need somebody in your life, you know, to tell you, look, you know, you need to pause, or look, you're going wrong, you know, what is happening? I'll tell you my own personal, I think there was 3 or 4 years ago, I was in Pune, and we were doing this GBC college course. It's a residential course, and few of the temple presidents across the world were selected for going through this residential course. So myself and my husband, we were also enrolled in this course, 15 days course. And it was so hectic. The schedule was like this. We were getting up for Mangal Arati. And then after Mangal Arati, we were chanting our 16 rounds in the temple hall. And then do the Darshanarthi and then Guru Puja and then take Prasadam. They have a different system. You take Prasadam and then you go for Bhagavatam class. So take Prasadam and then go for Bhagavatam class. And then as soon as the Bhagavatam class is over, go to the room, take my, you know, the files and the books, and then go to the conference hall. And then we had different other people coming and giving us different courses. And that goes on sometimes up to 1 in the afternoon. And sometimes the speakers, you know, who were giving this course to us, you know, they used to say, okay, can I take a 15 minutes more? Because I have this one last point to be completed. And we are all like, okay. By the time they finish, it's 12:31. And then we go for, with the books only, go for lunch. And then after lunch, you know, as we are doing lunch, there's some assignments given and they've been divided into groups and you have to submit that assignment before 3:30. So either we have some group discussions, or if there is no such group discussions, go to the room quickly and finish up all the phone calls which I missed from morning and whatever my school calls or the temple calls, and answer all the WhatsApp and get that maid, you know, who cleans the guest house room, to clean my room quickly. And by 3:30, I'm again back with the files in the conference hall. And then again, the whole thing goes on up to 7 in the evening. And then after 7, as soon as we are done, I run to the room, put my files, come back, you know, for dinner or sometimes no dinner. And then the car is waiting for me to go for house programs. Because there were a lot of people in Pune who were following me. And they were like, when you have come here, you have to come to our house. And we have invited people. So I'm just by 7:15, 7:30, I wash my face, put tilak, and I'm in the car going for a house satsang. Now, Pune is not like Vizag, and places are so far from, you know, one place to another. By the time I reach there, it will be 8:15, 8:30. And I'm all tired. And but when I enter into the room, I see there are hundreds of devotees sitting patiently doing kirtan and waiting for the class. And then I get all enthusiastic, go with the class, Prabhu speak, I speak, question answer. And then we have gone to their house. So something, some prasadam, something. By the time we are done, you know, 9:30, 10, by the time we, you know, we finish and then we pack up and then we reach the guest house, it's 11:30, 12 sometimes. And when we are going inside the, you know, guest house, I'm like completely exhausted, and I'm looking at all the other rooms. Baba, everybody is sleeping happily. Why did I have to do this, you know? And then at 12 o'clock, we are just opening the room and then we just close the eyes, and 3:15, 3:30, the alarm is again ringing, and they again same schedule the next day. And sometimes I was giving classes in between in the afternoon, and sometimes I was having Matajis come and meet me during breakfast, during lunch, because I wanted to save time. While I'm having lunch, I can talk to them, or some people have some questions or counseling. And that happened for whole 15 days that I was there. And I think 12th day or something, I was completely exhausted. I got in, my eyes are like, I'm like finished. And that evening, I think I had a class in Nigri or somewhere, and my husband said, "What are you doing?" He just asked me, he said, "What are you doing?" So I said, "No, I'm just preparing for the class." And he says, "Can you pause? You know," I said, "just look at your face. What's happened to you? You know, what are you doing?" You know. And then I realized, yeah, what am I doing? Because I was completely exhausted and finished, and my voice is, I'm just completely gone. And when he asked me to pause, you know, he said, "Su sukham kartum avyayam," is supposed to be done happily. What are you doing? You know, so much strain you are taking. And then I realized, when I contemplated, that it's true. I went to such an extent where, you know, during Tulsi Aarti, where they do Vrindai, Tulsi Deva, and you have to bend down. At that time, I used to just close my eyes and feel, can we just do this mantra for 3 more times so that I can keep my eyes closed? You know, so that means everything started becoming so mechanical for me, you know. Even when I'm standing in the Mangalarti or something, I'm like, you know, when you just take the aarti and you close your eyes also, I want to keep it 2 minutes closed only. I don't want to open it. Then I thought, I'm not relishing it. Now it's becoming too much on my body, and, you know. And then I was so grateful to my husband for this correction he made. You know, he said, "What are you doing?" That's what he asked me. He said, "Can you pause? You know, this is becoming too much for you. Just take a break, you know." So this is sometimes happens because you don't understand what, you know, unless until you have somebody to, you know, tell you or correct you or help, you know, what's happening with you. And sometimes, you know, you just want to prove people that you are perfect. Now, I, you know, and when I was in Pune for that 15 days, I think I was, you know, out of order. So I didn't go to Mangal Aarti for one Sunday morning. And Sunday evening, there was this one couple who came to meet me with their daughter. Now, this daughter, she gave me a letter in the hand. She's very shy to speak to me, and whatever she wants to say, she gave me a letter. And I was talking to that couple and all. And then when I went back to the room, I opened her letter. She had a small gift for me. And in the letter, she wrote that, "I'm so attached to you and your classes, and I always assumed that you come every day for Mangal Aarti. I requested my father and I forced him and coaxed him to come Sunday morning," I mean, that means that morning when they met me, "for Mangal Aarti, and you were not there in Mangal Aarti." And she felt so hurt. And then I was reading letter and I thought, oh my God, I disappointed her, you know, because I wasn't there for Mangal Aarti because I was not well. I am not supposed to go to the temple for 3 days. So I felt bad. And then the next day, even though I was not well, I somehow made it to Mangal Aarti, because I thought, I don't know how many such people may be getting disappointed. Maybe they just want to see me. Some of them have come from far and they say, Mataji is not there. We thought we can see her at Mangal Aarti. So then I was just trying to go through this thing that, you know, sometimes you just want to show people that you are perfect. Is it? You don't have to. You're a human being. You know, it may not be possible for you to always. And then now, over a period of time, I think I grew up. You know, now I'm like, I am a human, and certain things I can do, certain things I can't. So what is actually happening is that maybe I'm trying to put myself into a particular mold, but Size cannot fix, you know, cannot fit all. You know, everybody has different sizes, so I cannot compare or, you know, start coming to a standard which has been laid down for monks, for brahmacharis, because I'm not a brahmachari, and I have my own limitations in a body of a woman. I mean, maybe all 30 days in a month I can't. Maybe the brahmacharis can, because I have a family and I have children and I have school and I have house and I have, you know, certain my own health limitations, and I can't start functioning like a sannyasi or a brahmachari and give class 30 days in a month and keep traveling, and then it's not going to work out. So how, you know, all this, you need somebody to help you, somebody to correct you, some kind of contemplation, some kind of pause, some kind of introspection, what's happening, where otherwise things will start getting so mechanical. So now I grew up to a level where I think it's okay if I can't go for Mangalarti. It's okay. I mean, I just gave a class to the Portuguese devotees which started at 12 in the midnight, and it's okay if I don't go. And if I'm tired, I'm not able to make it, it's okay if I don't do it. So, you know, this this is also some kind of a false prestige where you just want to, you know, I have to be like this. I have to, you know, proper devotee means this is what I have to. No, you cannot put yourself in that mold. You know, you'll have to give yourself some space. Certain things you can do, certain things you can't do, right? So you have to be open to corrections. You have to be open to corrections. Otherwise, everything will become so mechanical. So what happens if you don't accept corrections? And what happens if you accept corrections? If you accept corrections in your life, then you will pause, you will fix whatever is wrong with you, and then you'll get better, and then slowly all the anarthas will go away, and then slowly there'll be nishtha and ruchi and asakti, and you'll get, you know, bhava and prema, and you'll go back home, back to Godhead. If you don't accept corrections, then what happens? You will wear mask. You will make mask just to cover up that I'm okay, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong with me. And then you will wear a mask, and then you will wear a mask, you will cover up things. And then when you start covering up things, then anartha will grow. And anartha will become more stronger. And the anartha will become more stronger. And then you may start developing psychological problems because there's so much burden, because you're living a hypocritic life. There is something that you're showing, something is happening inside. You're making so many mistakes and you're thinking, I made mistakes and nobody came to know about it. Very good, I can make some more mistakes. Whole life is getting into mess. You're getting into completely, and you may get all psychological problems. And then because of that burden that you are carrying, because you know what you have done inside, and you know what, you know, you're not taking corrections, and then slowly what happens, you become irritable and frustrated and angry, and you're not able to relate to people in a positive way, and you get all kinds of psychological problems. And then you get into a cycle of lying, cheating, then repeating, lie, cheat, repeat, lie, cheat, repeat, and that will ultimately keep you in the cycle of birth, death, old age and disease, and you'll never come out from there. Neither you're pleasing Krishna, neither you're pleasing Guru, neither you're pleasing yourself, and you're in a big mess. So one needs to accept corrections. If we accept corrections, we all have our dirty laundry which has to be cleaned. So we should accept corrections, and we should not run away from the corrections. That's very important. Sometimes when some devotees are corrected, instead of accepting it wholeheartedly, they don't want to show their face anymore to the Siksha Guru or to anybody who has corrected, or they want to just somehow escape the person who is giving them corrections. If this person is coming here, you want to escape. You don't want to take corrections. And sometimes you get bitter about it, bitter about the person who corrected you, and you just don't want to keep any more relationship. And that happens so many times with disciples and devotees. They don't want to keep connection with their Diksha Guru or Siksha Guru or counselor or mentor because they are correcting, and they get irritated and they don't want to be corrected. I'm reminded of this beautiful article which was there in the Back to Godhead magazine in the 1995 by Hare Krishna Devi Dasi. And the article was called The Social Role of Cows, wherein Mataji was explaining about different qualities of cows. And there was this one incident that she was explaining in that article, wherein she says that Hare Krishna Dasi Mataji's responsibility was to take care of the goshala, the cows. And one day it so happened that by mistake, she had kept the barn open. So the cow went off, you know. And then later on, Mataji realized that, Are, I didn't close the door and the cow must be out somewhere. So then she decided that she has to get the cow back. So now she went in search of the cow. Where is the cow gone, you know? And then she could hear the cow mooing somewhere. So she went and she was trying to get the cow back, but the cow was so happy munching the grass here and there, it does not want to go back into the barn. So finally Mataji thought, no, but somehow I have to get her back. So she took a stick and she had to little bit beat the cow to somehow get the cow back into the barn. So while beating the kick, she was feeling, while beating the cow, she was feeling little guilty in her mind that it's not the cow's mistake, it's my mistake. I'm supposed to close the door. But still now, since I have no choice, I'm somehow getting the cow, you know, in. So she was feeling guilty and somehow she, you know, by beating the cow and somehow brought the cow inside and she locked the door. Now, just after an hour, when she went in to give some food to the cow, she was so surprised. The cow was having same loving response towards her, mooing and looking at her. And when she came near, she was licking her. And same happy, merry. And then she said, as she thought in her mind that how sweet, I corrected the cow. The cow was, you know, erring, right? She was going out of the barn and I corrected her. And the cow has accepted it so nicely. She has tolerated, you know, of being corrected. And there's no complaint, you know, why did you? Or she doesn't have any grudge, you know, it was not my mistake. And she beats me and brings me back and I don't want to talk to her. No, she said, again, same love and affection she's showing. And Mataji was sharing that this is so beautiful. This is what quality of the cow we have to see. Anybody who corrects us, we should take it in such a positive way, not that we get angry on that person, that why is this person correcting me. Actually, the fact that somebody is correcting us, we need to be so grateful. In this busy world, who has time for giving us corrections? Somebody is thinking about us so much so as to, you know, giving us some correction. That's such a wonderful thing. So I was really amazed and, you know, very impressed with that article. Impressed with that article by Mataji, that's one wonderful thing that we need to accept. And actually, it's just your attitude. How do you take it? We should not take it as when somebody corrects us as if they're, you know, just they're criticizing me. It's no, they're just letting you know that there are some bugs in your software and you just need to update it. Just like we update our phone, right? On regular basis, I don't know, you know, on the Samsung phone, they regularly tell us, do you want to update your phone? I always schedule it, you know, middle of the night, maybe 2 o'clock sometime. And regularly the software gets updated in the phone. And I have no anger on the Samsung people that why update now? Why they didn't give the perfect one when they had issued the phone to me? And no, I mean, they are accepting it that, you know, when we issued the phone, okay, this may be the problems and there are some bugs and now we are updating it. And such a happy moment, you know, when every time you update your phone and update your software, your icons, colors change and everything looks so nice and pretty and fresh to be used, you know, and that's what happens with us. It's just a software update. You're making a mistake and your guru and your mentors and your family and your teachers and people around us is just telling you your software needs an update. That's it. These are the updates. These are the problems. These are the bugs. And just update yourself and just be grateful to them. You know, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong? So if we take it in that way, we don't feel bad. But sometimes some people may say, but Mataji, what about, you know, there are people in our life who keep on giving us corrections and feedbacks and corrections and sometimes it may not be the right corrections. They're just envious or they just don't like me. That's why they give me corrections. Or I don't know, there may be so many things that may be coming to your mind. But then you can always do something like have a network of your close friends and people whom you trust and whom you have complete faith on. And whenever you get so many different feedbacks, you can always filter it. You know, just like you filter water, you filter herbal tea or something like that. You just filter them. Okay, these are the feedbacks I'm getting. And then you share it with the people whom you trust and you love and you respect. These are the feedbacks people are giving me. So what should I do about it? And one doesn't need to get overwhelmed and start working on all feedbacks at a time. You should do it in a very phased manner. Put it in writing. These are the feedbacks I received and this is the areas which I need to work on. We should have something like an inventory. just like a godown has an inventory, so like that we should have our own inventory. These are my, you know, bad points, or these are my bad stock, or these are my good stock, and this is some feedback that somebody has given. So you add it in your inventory. Okay, this is something, you know, things to do list. I'll have to work on it. As of now, I'm working on this particular anartha in me, and then this is in the parking lot. I'm going to work on that also, and in a very systematic fashion, we can keep working on all our bugs and all our weaknesses and all our you know, corrections which are given by people, and ultimately become an, you know, beautiful devotees and beautiful human beings. And when people are giving us corrections, and you know, there is one other point that we need to you know, support us with, is sometimes it may happen that if you become too humble, and then lots of corrections, and you get so overwhelmed, and you should not become like, oh my God, nobody loves me, and there are no good qualities I have, oh, everybody is giving me. No, one thing you should always keep in mind, that no matter what you are and whatever situation you are in, Krishna always loves you, just like a parent loves a sick child. The parent never says, oh, my child got corona, I give up my child, my child has dengue, now I'm not going to. No, even if it has dengue or corona, they still love the child. So we may have our own maya, corona, dengues, and so many things we're having, but Krishna always loves us. That can, you know, gives us confidence that Krishna loves me. But as of now, this is the problem that I'm having. I'm sick, I have fever, and I need to just take corrections, take feedback, clean up myself. And Krishna is always there. Whether in this process, whatever that I'm going through, he's there, you know, supporting me. So if we keep this thing in our mind, then we can take corrections very happily, openly, right? And if we don't take these corrections, and if we don't work on this, then we will repeatedly stay back here, because the whole point is, why are we here in this material world in the first place? So unless and until we take feedbacks, take correction, take guidance, take association of devotees, and try and improve on all our weak points, you know, we are in a hospital. Why is somebody in a hospital? Because we are sick. So when we are sick, we need to take medicines, and we need to take, you know, if the doctor says, yeah, the hemoglobin is less, you don't fight with the doctor. How dare you say my hemoglobin is low? No, he's just giving you a helping you feedback. Okay, your hemoglobin is less. Okay, so you start taking dates, you start taking something. So here we are in this material world hospital, and then here there are people helping us out, the nurse and the compounder and the doctor and the other patients. Oh, you know, did you take kasayam? You take some ginger, this will help your throat. Take help from people. During this corona, we've been taking advice from all, everywhere, from WhatsApp group and YouTube and friends, and everybody say, take turmeric, take vitamin C, take this, take that. And we don't get angry on people when they, you know, help us with those home solutions. Why do we get angry on people when they give us feedbacks? So just we take everybody's feedback, see what is applicable with the help of other mentors that we have, and then we start working on them. So unless and until we get this quality of humility and tolerance, you know, we cannot protect ourselves. This world is so, see, just like, you know, people who go to gym, now they have these biceps, and because of that, you know, they're so physically strong, and they can, you know, protect themselves. Similarly, in spiritual life also, we need two biceps. That is, one is humility and one is tolerance. And if we keep these two biceps in our spiritual life, then it will help us from internal overreaction and also externally distasteful situations, how to handle them and how to manage them. So, of course, everything has to be taken in the right proportion. Nobody is asking us to become too passive and too humble. Neither should one become very aggressive. One should be assertive. It's a difference. If you're too passive and you're too timid, and then also you are in problem, you know, then you won't be able to have proper self-esteem, and then you may get, you know, inferiority complex, and then you may go down and you may have psychological problems. Neither you should become too rajasic and very aggressive and all. So neither passive and neither aggressive. One should be assertive. The right quantity of being polite and humble and firm. Whenever, whatever is required in the right quantity, with the help of Guru and Krishna. So I mean, there's so many other things to say, but I think it's already time. It's 9:05. Yes, for me, it's 9:05 here in the night. There's one other message that I saw yesterday. I think, yeah, somebody sent me one very nice story. It was funny. I'll just share that small story and then I'll close it here. I think I didn't say any story in this class, I think. And I should say one story. Otherwise, you see, my reputation is at stake. So people call me as a storyteller and I don't end with a story then. So there was this, in the forest, there was this conversation happening between a donkey and a tiger. So the donkey was telling the tiger, "Oh, what a beautiful sunny day today. And then you have this blue grass to eat. I'm so happy." So tiger said, "Hey, look, this is not blue grass. This is green grass." "So are you crazy? This is blue grass." The tiger says, "Are you crazy out of your mind? The grass is never blue. It's always green." They both were fighting. And now, you know, everybody were losing peace in the jungle because of their fighting. And said, okay, let's go to the king and sort it out. So both of them went to the king. The lion is the king of the jungle. So the donkey, he said first, he said, "Master, I want to put up my case. This tiger fellow is irritating me. What happened?" He said, "He says that the, you know, grass is green, but I'm saying the grass is blue. So what do you say? Is not the grass blue?" So the lion said, "Well, if you think the grass is blue, then the grass is blue." He said, "That's what I was saying. See, now you also accept the grass is blue. So can you punish this tiger fellow because he's been irritating me like anything?" So he said, "Okay, I punish him." So the lion said, "Okay, tiger, I punish you for 3 days. You can't, you know, speak to anybody. You have to take maunavrata. You have to be in silence." And the court is adjourned. You know, everybody goes back. Now the donkey is so happy. He goes all over the jungle, the grass is blue and the grass is blue, and is very happy. After 3 days of mauna, silent, you know, this tiger comes to the lion. This tiger comes to the lion and he says, "I just want to ask you one question. Is not the grass green?" The lion said, "Yeah, the grass is green." "So, but if the grass is green, why did you punish me and why didn't you punish the donkey?" So the lion said, "The fact that you wasted your time in arguing with a mere donkey, you need punishment. How could you be so stupid in, you know, wasting your time in arguing with a donkey? Let him think the grass is blue or black. You being a tiger, you know, how could you be so senseless to argue with a donkey? That is why I have punished you. That's the lesson. Next time, don't waste your time and energy, you know. I don't expect from an animal of your stature to, you know, stoop so low and get into an argument with a mere donkey." So I thought that was so wonderful when I was just going through that story. I thought, yeah, this is something interesting. Sometimes we simply waste our time in proving ourselves to people. Sometimes it may really not be so important also. You know, it's not about how many people, it's about who. Who is very important. This Facebook and this other social media forum has made us into such a this that we craving for how many likes, how many people following, how many. But it's not about how many, it's about who is following. It's about who. Whatever you are doing, whether your guru likes it, does Krishna like it, does your mentor like it. It's not about how many people. People are crazy, you know. Even if you don't do anything also, there'll be so many people who follow you. If you do also, there'll be so many people follow. The world is like that, you know. For everybody, there is some follower. There are sadhus in Vrindavan, you know. They take only milk every 365 days a year. They have so many followers. And there are some sadhus who take only water and they have so many followers. And there are sadhus who take nothing. They have so many followers. And there are sadhus who stand on one leg. They have followers. People stand on the head upside down. They also have followers. And some sadhus, they take only fruits. They have followers. Some sadhus, they worship stone. They have followers. Some worship tree. They have followers. Some worship clouds. They have followers. Some worship sun. This is the world, you know. Somebody will other, but it's not about how many, it's about who. So it's very important that we don't waste our time and energy in, you know, trying to convince and impress people around this world who may not be so important. The whole goal of our life is to somehow impress Krishna. so that he allows us to come back home, back to Godhead. That's the goal of our life. Otherwise, we're simply wasting time, just like the tiger was wasting time with the donkey in convincing people of, you know, and projecting ourselves in a particular mold. So the whole point is to be, you know, have introspection, contemplate, reflect what we are doing, take a self-inventory, be grateful to people around you, be right association of devotees, have a proper sadhana, pause, take proper instructions, be tolerant, develop good qualities. And this is all we should be focusing on. And then with all these masalas, will be the right recipe for a happy life. With this, I'll close it here. Thank you so much, dear devotees, for your patient hearing. Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Okay, maybe just one question. Yeah. Oh, such a wonderful question. Yeah, it's true. We exhibit all good qualities when we are dealing with people outside. But when it comes to our family, we take them for granted. I guess familiarity breeds contempt. And we are not valuing the Vaishnava association that we have in our family itself. So that is why one need to have, Krishna in the center. And even in the house, one needs to have proper sadhana, proper curriculum, you know.